You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Welcome to an episode of the Stardom Road podcast here on the Countout Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Scott Edwards. And with me, as always, is my good friend Trent Breward. Trent, how are you today?
I'm good. It seems like you know my name better than you know your own name. So that's, yeah, I guess things are going well.
Admittedly, stopped and paused at both the name of the actual show and my own name. So hot.
I wasn't going to call out the show name because there are many that you do.
Yeah.
But I feel like, as far as I know, look, you might live a secret life. You might be going off different Twitter handles, your burner accounts and all that.
Of course.
But I would have thought Scott Edwards would be something that you can call back to relatively easily. But who am I to judge?
Yeah. It was a rough go. It was a rough start. But I'm here. I've made it mentally. I've caught up to the rest of the show. Admittedly, I just kind of started the show, put the song on, called it a day. We're okay. We're okay. That's what matters the most. So let's get into it. Today's episode is about the history of the High Speed Championship. Pretty timely episode based on the direction the belt has taken as of late. And we're going to go over how it came to be part of Stardom, obviously, and the importance of the belt through the Stardom's history, and kind of just bring us all the way to now. Obviously, a lot of people that listen to this episode or the show know it from the brilliant days of Azumi with the belt and Starlight Kid with the belt and Natsupoi with the belt and most recently Mae Sara with the belt, right? Some really good champions through the past couple of years with some matches that I think many would agree are some of the best in Stardom. And that dates back really to the very beginning. There's many great matches that are because of this belt. So we are here to take you down that road today.
Yeah, I'm going down the high speed road. So there's no worries about kilometer or mile restrictions. Cops aren't going to pull you up for speeding on this podcast. We've got a lot to cover. We've got 15 years of championship history to cover as of pretty much this episode's dropping. May 5th was when the title was first introduced. So it's a very timely episode for a couple of reasons. But if you're sitting there confused, what do you mean 15 years of a championship running in a company that hasn't been running for 15 years? I don't think it's top secret information that the High Speed Championship wasn't originally a Stardom belt. That's kind of one of those facts that you bust out to new fans and they go, oh, wow, you know so much about Stardom, and people who have been, I guess, around the Stardom bubble for a while have probably been made aware of. But it is something that is worth noting. This is a championship that predates Stardom. It was part of the Neo Ladies Pro Wrestling, which is a company that, you know, folded before Stardom existed. Rossi acquired the rights to the belt and then brought it into Stardom. And that alone, A, explains that the belt looks different from every other Stardom belt, but I think gives it a very unique flavor. And the history of the belt and what that meant and the kind of belt that was seeps through, especially those first few years of the High Speed Championship within Stardom.
Yeah, the belt definitely like jumps out in terms of the Stardom lineup. That it was always that and the SWA that were like not fully in line with the rest of the belt. However, like you said, this was the Neo High Speed belt before it ultimately just became the High Speed Championship. If you look at it closely, it still says everything from the Neo days.
They haven't changed the design from that original thing. They haven't updated the belt since then. Probably should. But another fun fact, of course, is the championship was designed by WWE's Asuka before she was Asuka, back when she was Kana. She's one of those women who has had 15 million jobs. One of them was graphic design. she designed the belt, which is a pretty cool fun fact, even though she obviously hasn't challenged for the belt.
Yeah, I think that's always a fun fact. And it's a great belt. I love the high-speed belt. Like, I love the look of it. I obviously love what it has created through the years. It's a very, it really is a very important belt to Stardom's history. You know, we've talked about the name Natsuki Taio on this show before, and she is, you know, synonymous with this belt. It is, you know, before Azumi, this belt was Taio's belt. And I think Azumi is the only person that has come close to making it her belt in many ways. And that is a credit to really both of them. What Taio did with the belt and set such a high bar that very few could reach. She had some classics as the champion. But Azumi, of course, did the very same in the past couple of years. So that is the beauty of the high-speed belt that we are getting into today. Before we get into, like, more of the history of the belt, is it one of your favorite belts as well in, like, wrestling? Obviously, we're very directed on Stardom here, but when let me rephrase, when it's at its, like, when it's at its full usage, not when, you know, we go through the, because this belt has many ups and downs, right? Yes. But for me, when it's at its best, when it's on someone like an Azumi, for example, it's really hard to beat my excitement for those title matches. And, you know, you get the matches with the, and which we'll talk about through the history, like the very important title matches, including the one with Starlight Kid that everyone talks about. But you have the Taio and Leon matches from way back. You have Hazuki and Maesera just from this year alone, right? There's just, there's always one every year. And it's like, it speaks to what the belt does, because it's not the world title. It's not the Wonder Belt. It's not the tag. It's its own thing, but it stands out from many other belts. And I always think it's the belt that makes Stardom so different from everything else.
It's an interesting question, because a lot of the perceived weaknesses this championship has is in many ways its strengths. Like, the first thing that comes to my mind is the belt has a very limited pool of challenges, which is a bit of an issue. At the same time, when you've got Azumi as champion, and the only matches you really run are Starlight Kid, Natsupoi, Koguma, maybe bringing in a Mei Suruga, that's in a way a good thing, because you're guaranteed nothing but amazing matches when you're pulling from that kind of pool. So the weaknesses and the strengths kind of come together in a funny thing. I don't know if I would say it's one of my favorite belts in wrestling, just because when I first started getting into Stardom, it took a while for that belt to properly connect with me. And we can discuss why as we're going in. But I think if I'd came in maybe around the time you came in, and you know, pretty much once you jump in, you've got the Azumi reigns and Starlight Kid, and that's the point. You came in pretty much at the perfect time, as that high-speed belt was really starting to find what I would call its modern identity. So that's, yeah, it's not one of my favorites. But I tell you what, over the past few years, there's been a lot of matches where they've announced a high-speed match. I'm like, okay, that's the match I'm most excited for on the card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it is one of my favorites, but I think it does depend on like when you came into it and the importance of the belt itself. It really, for me, set Stardom apart from so many companies. And it's not because of the rule set, but it's because of the division at hand. I mean, one of my favorite... one of my first favorite matches once I started watching Stardom live in like real time is, funny enough, Azumi versus Meiho Shizuki, which is very funny considering how much I obviously talk about Maesera these days. But it was when Meiho Shizuki was still very young. She was still in pretty much rookie mode as a member of Marvelous at the time.
She had the rookie gear, so
yeah, but she just was so good, and that was like, it's why anytime someone asks me, like, what match would you show? It's always that the big high-speed match with Azumi and Kid. Like, to me, the highest level of this belt can match anything. Now, the lowest belt and especially can't. The lowest can't, but, you know. We have
in terms of, especially as you mentioned, like, matches you would show someone getting into Stardom for the first time, the high-speed belt is perfect for that, because it is so intertwined with a lot of Stardom's identity. You can show them Utami versus Shuri, Julia versus Shuri, any of those kind of big match situations. what they're going to see is a variation of a match that they've probably already seen, be it in New Japan, Pro Wrestling NOAH, AJPW, AEW, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The high-speed belt, when it's firing, is completely different. It's different from the cruiserweight divisions. It's different from the X division. It is its own beast in the way these matches were constructed. Yeah. And yeah, you watch that match and you get something that's uniquely Stardom, especially when you've got your Azumis and Starlight Kids firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I don't think there is a real, there's just not a comp to it in wrestling, truthfully. Like, there isn't one. But let's get into the history more so of the belts. Like you said earlier, it was acquired by Rossi when NEO disbanded in November 2010, with the belt being defended at the Five Passion event, as well as JWP shows, until the belt would become a permanent Stardom title, which of course happened at Stardom X Stardom on July 24th. With Taiyo.
As soon as the company formed, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was right off the bat. And obviously Natsuki Taiyo was a key part of this company when it came to be. Natsuki Taiyo would win the title for the third time, like we said, on July 24th, and she'd hold the title for 679 days as a result. From then, the only time the title would be defended outside of Stardom was 2017 at RCW show in Spain, where Chris Wolf had defended against Kaylee Ray, which, of course, I believe Kaylee Ray goes by All But Fire now in WWE.
Yes, that was so confusing when it came through. Like, not that I'm paying a lot of attention to WWE NXT, but like, you hear certain wrestlers that have gone in that you used to watch and stuff. I heard the name Al before, I'm like, oh, okay, I've never heard of that wrestler before. And then, lo and behold, oh, I have.
Trent notably mentions in our notes here half points to the 2016 show where Mayu Iwatani defended against Camille in France, which was a show co-promoted by Stardom and ABC. So
both of those were part of the SWA alliance, which is also kind of interesting. It's around the time when the SWA belt is sort of coming into being. That is interesting, those two promotions getting in on it a little bit, because as we, I think we've, have we covered the SWA belt on this show?
Not fully.
Yeah, because it felt like that just quickly the SWA belt came into being, and then the alliance pretty much stopped being as soon as that belt actually got going.
Yeah, so this belt was defended a lot on JWP. So the last champion before it became official part of Stardom, as I mentioned, was Leon. So that Stardom X Stardom show is a very prestigious match, part of a prestigious rivalry between both Taiyo and Leon. It was Leon who had defeated Taiyo to win this belt that one time, and they would go on to face, of course, at Stardom X Stardom. She'd go on to then defend the title only five total times, and that's really where we kind of get into the history of the belt and why it didn't feel like a big part of Stardom in completion. Like, obviously, I think a lot of people like look back at Stardom history and it's like Taiyo, high speed champion. But if you look at the actual history of the belt, it wasn't defended a lot. And Trent, I know you have stats for this, so let's roll up the stats and back us up.
I've been getting into a bit of a stats mode, I guess, because it's like NBA playoff season, so I'm kind of getting into all that kind of thing. You know, when we're talking about how that belt was kind of, yeah, as you said, it didn't feel fully Stardom for the first few years. And I mean, a big part of that is the defense ratio. So Natsuki Taiyo, five defenses over those 679 days. That equates to a single defense every 135 days. So basically once a season, you get a winter defense, you get a summer defense, you get a spring defense, an autumn defense, et cetera, et cetera. Kari Yoniyama would win her second championship, second high-speed run. She'd defend the belt three times in 210 days, so once every 70 days. Natsuki Taiyo wins it again, five defenses, 128 days. Much better. That's pretty much once a month. That's what we like to see. Io Shirai, which, you know, many of you will be aware of, be it either in WWE or just Stardom legacy, she won the high-speed championship and defended it twice in her 292-day reign, which was one defense every 146 days. It's hard to get invested in a championship that, like, it's there. Like, that's the, it's different from, say, when Toni Storm won the red belt and, like, she just wasn't around that much, so the belt was kind of gone. The belt was there. It was all held by wrestlers who are regularly wrestling with Stardom. It just didn't get defended much. And I think part of that is definitely due to problems that we see with the belt now, in the sense that back then the talent pool for that championship was very small as well. you got the same people challenging. So you had Natsuki Taya, you had Kogama when she was wrestling with Stardom. She was in those matches a lot. Had Kari Yoniyama a lot. Maya Yuhi, when she was, you know, very short run with Stardom, and Maya Watani was a regular challenger as well. She'd go on to win the belt as well. But, like, they were the only people that really challenged for that belt in Stardom's first, you know, 3-4 years with that title. And but when we get to that point that I mentioned, Io Shirai holding the belt, but, you know, she drops it in 2015. That's good 4 years of the company existing. That's a long time for a belt to be a part of the company, but not really feel a big part of the company. You know, by then, Stardom has its established image. The wrestlers have been in there a long time. All the other championships have had a chance to kind of build themselves into the system a lot more.
Right. And I think, like you said, there are comparisons to not necessarily present day. The title is very involved the past couple of years, obviously, but it depending when you get into Stardom, it does experience these lulls. And again, that is why, you know, when I talk about the title being one of my favorites, you say, well, when I was, you know, when you jumped in, it was like very different. And it, like you said, it's hard to invest. It's hard to appreciate something like this when that is how it's treated. But like you said, a hitter's row of champions. You go Taiyo, Yoniyama, Taiyo, Io Shirai off the rip, right? Yes. And obviously a title reign that many people know of, but I don't know if there's a full appreciation for it, is Koguma's one title reign. You know, it's talked about heavily, but didn't last that long. She had one successful defense against Suzuki, and then she dropped it to Starfire.
Yes.
Starfire, who still wrestles, by the way. Very interesting enough. But yeah, that kind of sets you off this like odd road for a little bit. You know, she drops it to La Rosa Negra, who had the belt for all of 18 days before dropping it to Mayu Iwatani, who then would hold it for 501 and have a real legitimate reign with the belt.
Yeah. I mean, it was right during that time, obviously, when the Threedom were being heavily promoted, because you have that classic image of the Threedom holding all of the championships. Mai with the high-speed belt, that was kind of her solo contribution. You know, they both had the they all had the trios title, her and Io had the tag title. She had the high-speed. That was her singles contribution to it. And I think for a lot of people getting to Stardom at that time, you associate Mai with the high-speed belt. I know I certainly did. And she is a wrestler, especially around that time, I think embodied what high-speed wrestling in 2015 to 2017 was really all about. For sure. And it is, it's very different to even the Natsuki Taya era, but especially to the modern era, you know, the Azumi Starlight Kid, the Natsupoi matches. You watch a Maya Watani high-speed championship match from back then, I should specify, it's a very different type of match to what you see now. And then the next group of champions, like Chris Wolf, would win it, and she'd be defending against Romy Mamora and stuff like that. And those matches felt very different to the kind of matches that we get now. And notably, there's one reign that's coming up that sort of changes that a bit, but we will get to that in due time.
So notably, what Trent is hinting at here is like the, with the rules, there's very different ways this belt was defended. You know, you would have, so like when Taiyo first had it, she was going 30 plus, you know, she went 30 minutes with Yoniyama, for example, 21 minutes with Leon. When Mayu had it, which was years later, she had one match that went over 15 minutes. And that was the match she won the title. Everything else, sub 15, which was a big, you know, part of that belt and the belt's identity at that time. It sounds like that's a possibility now in the present day Stardom, that they are going back to the way, which is I believe 10-second countouts and like 15-minute. They've played with those rules. We've seen those rules play with time and time again. I feel like every person that's had it, they've just decided to change it from time to time. There is no, I don't think there's a bad fashion to it, but it's something that it goes through its ages. You know, like there are times where this belt's just, you have to really pay attention to see what age we're going through, because I forget, there was a champion of the past couple of years who kind of hinted at going back to the rules, and then they just didn't, and it was like, All right, sure. I'm a bigger fan of what you would call the modern reign. Yeah. That's when I fell in love with this belt, obviously. But that isn't to take away from the 15 minutes limit, because like we said, Mayu did a great job with this belt. Like you said, she is kind of the person that a lot of people saw as the high speed champion. So I just wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, the matches themselves are perfectly fine, and the DNA of the high speed belt is there throughout, from Natsuki Tai all the way to the current era with Sai Kamitani. The DNA is still there, but it's interpreted in different ways. And like, I guess the easiest way to explain it is if you watch a high-speed match from this era that we're talking about, the sort of 2014 to 2017, 2018 period, what the matches basically boil down to is they're sub-15 minutes. You have the sort of roll-up spots. You have the moments of high speed. You have a lot more counter-wrestling and sort of the initial lockups and sort of changing the change of holds through there. And you have more of like hit a couple high speed moves, break, hit a couple high speed moves, break. Now you just remove those breaks and they just go from 0 to 100 from the opening bell and they never really stop. Mm-hmm. So that's the easiest way. These matches kind of feel like more traditional matches, for better or for worse, depends on your particular flavor of wrestling.
For sure. I think the beauty of the belt, again, is the eras it goes through. While you and me do talk about ups and downs of the belt, which kind of is champion to champion, the way the rules were utilized does help highlight it. And, you know, after Mayu Iitani was, of course, Chris Wolf, who held the championship, then Shana, Mary Apache, and that, of course, brings us to Hazuki, which is a very specific reign. One that is, again, if this is another reign that I think a lot of people came into stardom for, and they recognize Suzuki as their high-speed champion. She held it for 208 days, but she defended the belt total of nine times, losing it in her final defense, of course, to Death Yama-san, being Kaori, and Azumi in that three-way that was actually replayed just a little bit ago when Azumi was champion. But Hazuki really altered that title and the way she wrestled it. You want to talk about not hitting 15 minutes? She never hit 10 minutes in her race.
And that was a rule under her high-speed championship reign. Matches weren't going to go over 10 minutes, and you had to have abs, which is the thing I remember most from this reign, which was just hilarious. It's like, if you don't have a six-pack, you're not allowed to challenge for this belt, which whether that constitutes high-speed or not, it gave you an idea of what Hazuki's mindset was with this championship. And to paint an even bigger picture, Hazuki's saying this after beating Mary Apache, who is a very famous luchadora. Like, she's very big through the 90s and early 2000s. She was a fairly prominent part of stardom around the time when I joined in. And my first true memory of the high-speed belt really is her as champion. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different title reign to what we were getting moving forward. She brought in a lot of the luchador aspect, which, as you would expect, that kind of, you know, she comes from Mexico, she brings that vibe in. But the change in just focus and style between her and Hazuki is night and day. And Hazuki really ushers in the modern era of the high-speed belt. You know, 10-minute matches, even though, like, Azumi and stuff, they would go 15, 20 minutes in the future. But, like, Hazuki brought in 10 minutes and you had to be going from the start. Now, she still incorporated a lot of the high-speed stuff you would see beforehand, but she brought a certain intensity. And even if you haven't watched her high-speed reign, if you are aware of Hazuki, if you've watched her in 2024 or any other time period, you know she brings a certain energy and intensity in the way she wrestles. And if you don't match her, you're going to get swamped. In a high-speed match where you've got 10 minutes to do it, that's even more so. And that intensity is what you see Azumi then adapt and develop into her reign. Mm-hmm. And wear that modern style, which I think when most people think high speed now, you picture the Azumi style. That wasn't always the case. Hazuki was kind of the modern innovator of that style. Took a bit of a break when Rio won the belt. She didn't really bring it in that same style, and she also wasn't defending it all that much. But once you get it to Azumi to give her the proper run, that's when that Hazuki style kind of reinvigorates and turns into the modern stardom high speed match.
Yeah, it's very interesting to say the modern high-speed match when matches are going 5 minutes right? But it is absolutely right. And, you know, it's funny we talk about Suzuki because she is someone who still embodies much of this style to her. Like, obviously, she is a more complete product now in terms of the way she wrestles, but this version of herself has never left, right? We're coming off a match where it was her and Koguma versus Crazy Star, and it was very much embodying this kind of match anytime she was in the ring. It's just how she wrestles, and it did raise the bar big time within this match, and I think that's very important. The title has never been vacated, which is a good thing.
It's also very rare for Stardom. Yeah. Like, I have to double think. There's no other Stardom championship, and we're counting Stardom titles, so it's not the IWGP title or anything. Every other championship has been vacated at least once. In reality, multiple times. This one somehow has survived all of that. And it's not even because of protected champions who have gotten injured either. This is just a championship that people go in, they wrestle their style. It's a very hard style, very fast style. Maybe because it draws from the lucha stuff and they're rolling through a lot of the moves early on, maybe protects them a little bit more. But it is fascinating that this style hasn't really introduced injuries like you maybe would expect. And I'm touching all of the wood around me to make sure I haven't just jinxed the next couple of high-speed championships that happen.
Yeah, yeah. People are going to be coming for you if something bad goes wrong, you know? So happy you jinxed it. Happy you said it and I didn't. Well, I did say it, but you know, you put on the note sheet, so I'm blaming you. but let's get
in. Right, no one's been injured. That was just me popping off.
Yeah, let's get. Would you like to get into more stats?
I would love to get into more
stats. Because, folks, Trent is on a stat rub right now. Everything Trent's doing is stats. Big.
We watched Moneyball the other night. I'm into it. Mm. I'm going to trade that, you know, main eventer. That's not true.
Did you really?
I'm going to find three people. No, I watched it like a couple of years ago. But it's a really good movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I'm bringing in the intensity of Brad Pitt here. Yeah. I obviously, if you're watching on YouTube, you know I embody him visually as well as here when I'm talking about the high-speed championship. Here's some fun facts for you. By the numbers. There's been 21 championship reigns. This is just, I should point out, purely the Stardom side of things. I'm not covering the Neo run here.
It's purely
the Stardom championship runs. 21 championship reigns all time, encompassing 4,661 total days. Within that, there's been 68 successful defenses, which gives us an average reign length of 221.91 days. So that's a pretty decent run. Like, the average person holding the championship's doing it for a good amount. Obviously, this is bumped up by your Natsuki Taiyo reign and also the Azumi run, but it is also bumped down by the most recent runs. Saki Kashima, Maesera, Nerosa Negra brought it down. So yeah, average is kind of average out in that way. Average defense is 3.24. So every championship reign, they manage to successfully defend it every three and a bit times, which is a median reign length of 178 days and three defenses. Average amount of days between each defense is 68.5. So look, you think that is bumped by obviously that very long opening period, those first few years. Not as much as you might think, because I also broke down the Bushiroad era. Now, I'm counting Rio's reign in this because when she won the title, it was only a couple of months before Bushiroad would take over, and she held the belt for a fair while there. It wasn't just straight to Azumi once Bushiroad sort of took over. So the average amount of days between defenses there was only 55.62. So we're nearly at once every 2 months, even since Bushiroad took over, which kind of surprised me, if I'm being honest. I think this is probably helped by your Cinderella tournaments, your tag tournaments, and your five-star Grand Prix kind of bumping things out a little bit. But especially, you know, in the past few years, it has felt like a monthly defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's changed to kind of the normal reign for like a normal defense schedule for a title rather than what it once was, which is very sporadic, very kind of out of nowhere. Obviously, like, Riho's reign was kind of deflating for the title. Yes. You know, she held it 351 days, but she defended it twice, including the match.
Part of that was it was during the pandemic period, so you lost a few months there, and Rio was working with AEW at that time as well, which impacted when she could wrestle and, in theory, when she could win and lose. Because she, you know, she didn't lose really at all in that run until she eventually dropped the belt. She didn't get pinned to lose the belt either. She was very protected during that time.
Yeah,
most people would talk the modern era, the Bushiroad era, being starting from Azumi, and that's totally fair. I think you can sort of make a case for that. I was just being pedantic because when you're talking a couple of months since she won it and then not losing it till well into halfway through the next year, I think you got to count that as a Bushiroad reign. But Azumi holds the honor for having the most prototypical championship reign. So when we're talking the averages, her first reign came the closest to that, 220 days with four successful defenses, running from July 26, 2020 to March 3, 2021. So if you want to know what is the most average version of that championship's run in terms of defenses and length, that first Azumi reign is it.
Do you have the most important stat, though?
Which one is that?
How many versions of Yoniyama has challenged for the belt?
I didn't make note of that. We know we have two versions that have won the championship.
Yes.
It would be four, wouldn't it? Because I think both Gokigen
and Fugigen did,
Yeah, and Def Yamasana won it. Billy Kim Def hasn't challenged for it. She's been reserved for Battle Royals.
Yes, we have one more to complete in the future, hopefully.
Providing she doesn't then adapt another gimmick instead.
Yeah, she's held on to Fugigen for a long time.
Yes, yes.
So,
and she's added little things to it, but it has remained mostly the same, yet hasn't become as stale as the others have.
She hasn't smoked in a while. She didn't smoke in a while. True. She quit smoking, so, you know, that's good.
Good on her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a way to show that clowns don't always smoke, I guess, to the children.
Fake smoking is a difficult habit to fake give up.
So, going back to our regularly scheduled programming, so like we talked about, Tayo did have the longest reign, 679 days, which was the first Stardom reign and her third total. So her length as champion with this belt was 1,203 days with four total reigns, which is also the most. Of course, it was Azumi who, in her second reign, set all sorts of records and whatnot, holding the belt for 459 days, successfully defending it 12 times, I think. Is that the math? Yes. That's correct? Yes.
Yeah.
And... That's stats. See, I don't even write down my stats. I'm just going off of looking. But that reign is, I think we can both agree, the most, one of, if not the most important for this belt. It would be between this and probably the Suzuki one in kind of altering the way this championship was treated. Obviously, the most important champions and the most well-known champions are Tayo and Azumi. And somewhere down the line, we will dive into that Azumi reign specifically, because that deserves its own little series, much like the Otami reign that we just came off of. But I think the beauty of this title and talking about its legacy is like where Azumi brought it. Right, she brought it to a point where people wanted to see it in the main event. That says a lot, because we were talking about at a time where the belt was one, either barely defended or 5-minute matches, or, you know, nowhere to be found because someone is working in another company. You know, like there's so many different ways that this title has experienced, but Azumi brought it to what I think is the highest bar for that championship.
Especially, like, obviously Stardom had grown to, but at the time Azumi was champion the second time, Stardom itself had grown to an area that hadn't really reached outside of that. But the high-speed belt grew with it. It would have been very easy for that championship to fall down the card as Stardom got bigger, but they were semi-main eventing pay-per-views with this championship. Yeah, and it was a featured attraction match. It wasn't just something I think, you know, you look at the WCW Cruiserweight matches, which people love those matches. They were often by far the best wrestling on the WCW shows. But that belt was used to open the show, get the crowd in, get them excited, and then worry about the main event, the big names. This belt could have easily fallen into that role. Yep. But Azumi made it a belt that people wanted to see, people were paying money to see, and it was treated with such value that it was semi-main eventing. And you had people wanting to see this match main event over good red belt runs and good white belt runs. This was not a weak period for those championships, but that's just how good the high-speed championship was considered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about, we've mentioned the Azumi Starlight Kid match from February 23, 2021. That match is so important to a lot of people and such a go-to match for, you should see this if you're getting into stardom. That was the high-speed title. Arguably at its best, like single match, like perfect example of what high speed means, it's probably that match. But her reign was full of those kind of matches. The Mei Suruga match, the Kogama matches, you know, the Natsupoi matches, so many good, even, it doesn't get mentioned, the Momo Kogo match, like probably Momo Kogo's best match in Japan, still to this day. Like, you've got to factor out where she turns into Super Saiyan in America, but like her best match in Japan.
Yeah.
And the Azumi reign went for so long that you couldn't rely on just the same names. You couldn't just run Starlight Kid, Natsupoi, Kogama, Fukigen Death, and just repeat that. Because she held it for too long. And this reign has different names popping up. They gave Rina a title match. You know, they gave Mei Suruga the title match. They gave Momo Kogo a title match. Yes. It's just fascinating seeing when it ran for that long what the belt could fully become. And that's what I really appreciate about that reign.
I think she perfectly, in her second reign, captures what Taiyo had created and what Hazuki had done all in one. You know, she defends, just like list off the names, Kogama, Natsupoi, Mei Suruga, Tekla, Momo Kogo, Rina, Fukigen Death, Hazuki, Momoka Hanazono, Hikari Shimizu, Starlight Kid, of course, again, in a big rematch, Saki Kashima, Mei Sara. Like, that is a long list of names that I think is where the belt often suffers, is it doesn't have that long list of names to pick from. And yet they tried new things with her, and she was someone that could lead that way still at the very young age, obviously, that she was at, but she was able to have those matches with people you wouldn't expect in high speed matches. And I think that's partly where the belt may be going now, is having those matches with people you may not expect in the high speed division and seeing what happens. I mean, Saya Kamatani is the reigning champion as of this recording. So, I mean, that says it all. She's not a necessarily seen as a high speed wrestler. She has the record Wonder of Stardom title reign under her belt after all.
She's a very prototypical, to me, she's a prototypical high speed wrestler from 5, 6, 7 years ago. If she was wrestling around the time Maya Watani was champion, she was that perfect mold in the way that match was, in the way those high speed matches were wrestled. She has spurts of high speed nature with her move set and her flash pin styles, but she doesn't wrestle a high speed Azumi style match. And her first opponent is against seemingly Saida, who also has those elements of high speed without being a high speed wrestler as such. So are they going back to that style, which would certainly open up the belt a lot more in terms of contenders? Because the reality is, the Azumi style, the Starlight Kid style, a lot of wrestlers just can't keep up. You can't run that style with a lot of wrestlers on the roster because it's asking so much of them. A 2015-2016 high-speed style, though, is a lot more feasible for the wrestlers on the roster. The other thing to keep in mind, this current high-speed champion, Saya Kamatani, we have not had a stronger person win the belt all the way back since Io Shirai, when she was the red belt champion when she won the high-speed championship. Mm-hmm. That's the closest comparison we have. You know, that's obviously, Io's reign isn't the best example because she held it for ages and just didn't defend the belt. But we're in very much in uncharted territory here. How do they handle a main event level talent wrestling a title that, although it has peaked its head into the semi-main event picture, has generally done so with wrestlers that aren't seen as main eventers?
Right.
I'm very curious to see how they now move forward with this. Do they get stuck in the future belt situation where they had someone too strong holding the belt and they had to find ways to get them off or vacate? Are we predicting a vacation of this high speed belt finally after, you know, 15 years of the championship existing? I don't know. very curious to see what happens here. Sai Kamitani, I think, is going to do some very interesting things with the belt. I'm equal parts nervous and excited. Excited because Sai Kamitani is a fantastic wrestler. Nervous because I think we're losing the high-speed style that we've had for a few years and gotten very accustomed to.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. I think it could take away from the belt, depending on how this goes. And it shouldn't, because it has someone that's such a great champion that we've seen have a historic title reign, one of the best in Stardom history. So it shouldn't, but we'll have to wait and see. But let's talk about the belt's legacy as we wrap up here. Shorter episode today, obviously. We're just talking about belt history.
It's a high-speed championship. Where it's got to be fast.
It's going to be a fast episode. It's on brand. Let's talk about that belt's legacy. It's not a... To me, it's the best example of a mid-card belt in Stardom. Really the best you're going to get, because I always have these conversations with people that don't fully know Stardom or don't fully follow. They follow from the outside. They just watch shows, and they love to try to tell me the wonder of Stardom title is a mid-card title. I'm like, it's not. It's very different. The high-speed title, in many ways, does lend itself to being that. It's still very specific. It's still a niche title. It doesn't fit the mold for everyone. Maybe it does now. We'll have to wait and see. But it's ultimately a very important belt in the company's history. It's one that has made many fans through the past couple of years, especially, right? It's rose to prominence through the likes of Azumi and Starlight Kid and Natsupoi. Right, their reigns really set the bar. Obviously, Azumi's record reign did more for that belt than anything else. It almost, in many ways, set that belt to such a high standard that it's hard to follow. And we've seen, since things have changed here in the Stardom company, that I'm not sure they fully know what they want to do with the belt yet, right? We kind of had the Maesara reign that was going to be what tried to follow the Azumi reign. She had that great match with Hazuki. And since that match, we've had two new champions. So they're still trying to figure out. They really are going back to the old school way of passing this belt around, which I don't love, but with the way they're trying to figure out how do we unlimit opponents, it's part of the way to get there.
The high-speed belt legacy, to me, in many ways defines creating the next generation. You look at the list of champions, and it's defined the wrestlers that have sort of gone through it. You look at someone like Mayu Iwatani. Obviously, she's remembered for other championship reigns more. But a lot of what makes Mayu Mayu was kind of discovered through this high-speed belt run. When she had a good time to finally establish herself as a champion, grow as a performer, without the luxury of leaning on Io Shirai and Kari Hojo. The high-speed run, she had to build herself up.
Mm-hmm.
You look at how it's developed someone like Azumi, who has just gone from the little kid to one of the most popular wrestlers in Stardom, someone who's demanding attention worldwide. And, one of the quickest wrestlers in the world, but isn't defined purely by, I go quickly. Right. Starlight Kid grew herself through this division. Natsupoi grew herself through this division. Maesara's kind of developed herself, not through it, but, incorporating that style. And even someone like Hazuki, that high-speed run obviously didn't amount to bigger things. She'd retire, quote-unquote, at the end of the year after losing the belt. But that was a very important championship for making people realize how good Hazuki was right then and there. And after she dropped that belt, people were, okay, we're ready for a white belt reign. It's forced wrestlers to adapt for better or for worse. Someone like Momo Watanabe is not a high-speed wrestler. But when she got called into that match with Starlight Kid, boy, did she do a fun and great and interesting job with it. And ultimately, his legacy is the ebbs and flows of how the championship has been handled. From a belt that popped up here and there to a belt that was held by the veterans of the industry, mostly with Kaori, with Natsuki, with Io, to a belt that kind of had a certain style that didn't really stand out beyond the amount of time the matches ran to the modern era, which has completely redesigned what the belt means, to the point that now we're looking at Sai Kamitani's champion going, well, she doesn't wrestle this style. How is she going to be a champion? Actuality, she did wrestle this style. It's just a throwback style. Whether she does that now remains to be seen. But the legacy is the ebbs and flows from a belt that was never really Stardom's. When it came into fruition, Azumi was 6 years old. And now it's a belt that feels so uniquely Stardom. Like, of all the championships, this is the one that feels most like a Stardom championship because of what wrestlers have done to make it feel unique and make it feel special.
I think that's very well said, and I think you nailed it with the creating the future. I think this title, through the years, we've watched multiple people hold it, and once they lose it, fans have gone, all right, so when are they going to get the big belt, right? Whether it be the Wonder or World. We've watched Kid do it. We've watched Azumi do it. We watched Suzuki do it. Obviously, Suzuki retired, but you know that title reign was unfortunately her only token in the singles world, right? That is all she's had, but people continue to ask for it because it's a creative outlet to develop these wrestlers and let them kind of, while fit into a certain style that the belt presents, wrestle their own style and figure themselves out. I always think when you can maximize your minutes in wrestling, you can be one of the very best. And I say that in, there are so many wrestlers today that wrestle very long matches. That doesn't mean they're good matches, but they wrestle very long matches. And it's filling all that time that is always a struggle. And rather than having to worry about filling time, these wrestlers worried about putting everything they can into the time allotted to them. And I think it's very different, and it's why we see Azumi as one of the best already in this on the world. It's why Hazuki's one of the best. It's why these wrestlers, especially of the past couple of years, are among the best. It's even dating back to the original. It's why Taiyo was one of the best at the time, right? It's just, that's the beauty of this belt. It creates, it can create a main event talent. It's just a matter of, you know, do they go with them? That is not up to me to decide. But listen, who is the wrestler that amazed the most fans when they went to the U.S. this time around? It was Azumi. She did. She had three matches. She had one in Stardom. She had one in New Japan. And she had one in AEW. And she opened eyes in every single one of them. Oh, and Ring of Honor, actually. Sorry, that's four matches. But it speaks to what this title does. It speaks to the style that this title presents. And it's why I talk about that match between Azumi and Starlight Kid as the one to show people if they're getting into Stardom. You're not getting that anywhere else.
No.
It's a main event.
One final thing I do. Oh, sorry. You finish up.
It's a main event style match in less than 20 minutes. Not many companies can do that.
What's the saying? If you can't have a good match in 7 minutes, you can't have one in 27. One other thing I just wanted to quickly shout out. I missed the opportunity originally because I forgot and it wasn't in my notes and stats and stuff. Shout out to Nao Yamaguchi and her run as the low speed champion. The prototype to the Saki Kashima title run. Obviously, the low speed belt wasn't an official designated championship. She held it while Hazuki was holding it. It was a fun little cardboard pig championship. I remembered how fun that was and how, the Hazuki reign was so unique in how it sort of built a box for itself with those restrictions. Mm-hmm. And then you had Nao Yamaguchi running around with that cardboard championship.
It's very appreciated. Low speed. Only one person has done that with the actual belt. Shout out to Saki Kashima. But it's the beauty of creativity that comes with this belt, I think, in many ways. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves moving forward because now it's under a whole new regime that, you know, may want to alter it as we see fit. Of course, Saitama Tani is the one holding it now. So we'll have to wait and see. But the history of the high speed, one of the most important titles in Stardom's history. And like Trent said, maybe the most Stardom title in Stardom's history, if you know what that means. Anyways, as we wrap this up, Trent, where can the people find you? What do you have going on? Anything else that you may have to offer?
So you can follow me on Twitter/X at OneUpCulture. Obviously, my main focal point now is Razura, the website that Ryan started, which both of us are involved with. Really good news. We're in the month of May, which is a special thing. We're running the month of Mayu, or Mayu, depending on how you want to pronounce it. We're releasing a whole bunch of my Watani pieces. I haven't released my piece yet. but it will be coming later in the month. It's covering Mai Iwatani's second red belt run and the importance of it. Obviously, that was during the COVID era. But we've also got Ryan, who's released a piece covering the Mai Iwatani versus Jungle Kiona match. He's also got a piece coming basically detailing her first year in the company. We're going to have like a top 10 list on matches, which I believe you're covering, Scott. And just other Mai Iwatani stuff peppered through social medias and the website. So if you're a fan of Mai Iwatani, and I'm guessing you are if you're watching Stardom Road, if not, the hell is wrong with you. But if you're a fan of Mai Iwatani, be sure to check out Rozura all through the month of May.
Absolutely. For me, I don't know, I'm going on vacation, so I almost don't care what I'm doing. you can check out the Five-Star Joshi show each and every week. There will be an episode. That's the only content I'll have while I'm away. So that will be the one to check out. It'll be a fun evergreen episode.
So not committed to this industry, just going away on holidays when there's wrestling going on. Who would do that?
I haven't had a holiday in so long.
Who would do that?
Not me, because I'll still probably do stuff while I'm away. That's the problem. I am a maniac.
You have to make sure to pack your phone and your
laptop. You hear that article that you just mentioned? Yeah, they'll probably be worked on while I'm not here. Anyways,
it's not you until you're back.
Still, this is how I work. But anyways, yeah, that's about it. Follow me at Scott E. Wrestling on X.
And follow him at the following location on his holiday.
Don't follow me. I don't want to. If my
deep in the heart of Ohio, he's going to be hiking.
Yeah.
Maybe totally. Are there mountains in Ohio? I don't know.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks for another episode of the Stardom Road podcast. Until then, see ya.
This has been a Count Out podcast. Every year, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame receives a new crop of nominees, and a few of those wrestlers are added for the very first time. Welcome to The Ballot, a brand new podcast on the Countout Network dissecting the pro wrestling careers of these first-time nominees on the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame Ballot. This is a place where the conversations begin on whether or not these newbies are worthy of being considered true Hall of Famers. Join me, Ryan Knightsey, as I sit down with a guest every month and discuss if a wrestler has the skills, the stardom, and the significance to be considered one of the greats. Subscribe to The Ballot wherever you get podcasts and follow along to learn with me about the greatness of professional wrestling. Please enjoy the show.